Okay, so the next thing on our list is the story for all ages. The title of the book is They, She, He, Me, Free to Be by Maya Gonzalez and Matthew S.G. So here we go. We'll make that big.
They, She, He, Me, Free to Be. By Maya and Matthew. Published by Reflection Press. For Zai and Sky, may you always be free. Maya and Matthew. Me, he, she, they. Free to be. Me, me, me. Me, me, me. Me, me, me. Me, me, me. He, he, he. He, he, he. He, he, he. He, he, he. She, she, she. She, she, she. She, she, she. She. They. They. Tree, Z. We. Pronouns. When you were born, you were given a name and a pronoun, probably he or she. As you get older and know yourself more and more on the inside, some of the ideas of she and he may fit you and some of them may not. Ideas about he and she are very strong right now. Many people believe he means only certain things and she means only certain things. These ideas affect what people think about everything, how you dress, how you wear your hair, or how you express the spirit of who you are, or even what colors you like. People can think they know what your pronoun is based on their ideas about she and he. This is a way of only looking at the outside of a person and not the inside of a person. Freeing pronouns. On the inside, you may not feel like she or he at all. Maybe they feels the most free, or you may feel like both she and he. But mostly, you probably just feel like yourself. This inside part is the most important part, because there's no one else like you in the world. This is why everyone should be free to be exactly who they are on the inside. Who you are is not always something you can put into words or explain. You just know who you are because you are. Pronouns can be a way to share how you feel on the inside. Because this inside part is the most important part of you.
Okay, sorry. I'm going to finish this page, sorry.
It cannot be about outside ideas of how people think she or he is supposed to act. It has to be about how you feel. The truth is, ideas about he and she change all the time. They don't fit. You might be an important part of changing them.
Okay. We are stopping there. And then... We are to the chalice lighting, which is going to be read by Catherine. Kathy?
I just unmuted them, so.
Yep. Can you hear me?
Yep.
All right. Chalice Lighting by Amy Carroll Webb. We light this flame for the art of sacred unknowing. Humbled by all that we cannot fathom in this, we come into the presence of what we do know, perhaps the only thing we can ever know, that love is now and forever, the only answer to everything and everyone in every moment.
Okay, and then we have, I forgot to light the chalice, so I'm going to light the chalice. If you have a chalice at home, you're welcome to light yours as well. And we have a moment of silent meditation. So I'll ring the gong and you can breathe together. If you can see in the order of service, there is a link to more information about the Day of Silence, which is, it's, like I said, it's there. It's a link for everybody. And then we have another story for all ages. Is that?
Katrina's going to do that. So if you can stop sharing your screen, then she'll show her camera. We have two stories. It's bonus story day.
Okay, so I actually took pictures of all the pages and made it into a PowerPoint to make it easier to share. So this is called Moondragon in the Mosque Garden, and it was written by, again, some friends of mine, Elfarouk Kaki and Troy Jackson, who are the founders of the mosque that I will be talking about in my sermon today. It's about Ramadan, which, as I mentioned, we're in the month of Ramadan now. Papa T sticks his head into Tajeli's room and laughs. I'm glad you like the clothes I made, but now put them on, please. We don't want to be late. Lots of people stop to greet them with hugs and kisses, saying, Assalamu alaikum.
The pictures don't seem to be going forward.
Oh. They are on my screen. Holly sees them?
Yeah, I see them. They're hugging right now.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe it's just me then.
All right. Lots of people stop to greet them with hugs and kisses, saying, Assalamu alaikum and Eid Mubarak. Tajeli sees his cousins, Mujtaba and Asiya, and they run toward each other. Some people can't tell them apart, but Tajeli always can. Tajeli loves how his Unity Mosque is gray on the outside, but full of color on the inside. On a sunny day, every room is full of bright rainbows, and the biggest ones go where the leader of prayers stand. And today, that's his big cousin Hajar, her first time. Tajeli, Mujtaba, and Asiya cover Hajar in hugs and kisses before she goes to prepare. Asiya points to the old garden and says quietly, Later, let's go outside. Tajeli looks out, and just for a minute, it seems like he sees something. Something purple. Yes, he says, just as Daddy E calls them all in to stand for prayers. After the prayers, which Hajar does perfectly, Auntie Amina starts to talk about the earth and stewardship. Tajeli and his cousins bounce and fidget and try to follow. Auntie Amina gives them a stern look and says, We must all keep the promise to take care of our Mother Earth. After the talk finishes, Tajeli and his cousins run for the sweets table and collect as many as they can. Eid al-Fitr is full of sweets and presents. Tajeli, Mujtaba, and Asiya meet under the table with the lime green tablecloth so they can sneak out before their parents notice. Just when they get giggly and wiggly, Tajeli's Papa T sticks his head under the table with a smile and says, Aha! The three cousins run outside laughing. When they get outside into the sunshine, the twins snap off some twigs and whack wildly at the tall grass as they run off. Tajelli kicks an empty bottle for a while. Asiya pulls flowers off a big bush and fills the fountain with them while Mujtaba eats caramels and holds each wrapper up to wiggle until the wind carries it off. Suddenly, the wrappers start to fly back toward them and empty bottles and other litter too. It's so gross. Who's doing that? Stop it, please, Tajelli shouts. Come on, guys, let's get out of here, calls Mujtaba. Out of nowhere, a voice like a bubbling stream says, didn't you learn anything from your Auntie Amina's sermon? The kids look all over until they see a shimmering, hazy purple shape of a small dragon? A breeze blows through the garden, ruffling its silvery feathers. You couldn't pronounce my name, says the dragon, tossing its head. So just call me Moon Dragon. That's what I am. Tajelli asks, where did you come from? How come you can talk? What's a moon dragon? Asks Mujtaba. Moon Dragon just smiles and shrugs. I asked first, did you not learn anything from your Auntie Amina's talk? Were you just pretending to listen to her? Moon Dragon says. Moondragon shows Tajelli, Mujtaba, and Asiya a trail of ants carrying leaves, food, and bits of things in procession. Look here, they are trying to use every bit wisely. Then it waves them on to a bunch of overgrown water lilies and points at them. They're full of bees. Here are more small things doing their job, so we get plenty of flowers and vegetables. So cute, says Moondragon, petting their fuzzy bums gently. In the blink of the moon dragon's silvery eyelashes, all three kids are shrunk down to the size of bees. Can you see how big a job it must be to them? And yet they work on making it nicer and healthier. Tajelli and his cousins start to understand. Just then, a caramel wrapper five times their size comes flying towards them. They duck. Moon dragon makes everyone their regular size again with a flick of its tail. It's a lot of work to care for the earth, and you three have been very disrespectful to this garden. So now you cannot leave until it's all cleaned. If you don't help, you will be trapped in this garden forever. Then Moondragon starts to laugh. Just kidding. No one can make you give the earth your love and care, but I hope you will choose to join me and the ants and the bees. The kids all nodded and smiled. We will. Tajelli and the twins help Moondragon. They pick up the garbage, trim the plants, scrub the stones, clear the fountain, and water everything. In no time, the garden is looking beautiful, but their Eid outfits are not. Daddy and Papa T and Grandma Rose come outside looking for Tajelli and his cousins. Just before they're going to scold the children, they notice how beautiful the garden looks. Tajelli says, our friend Moondragon made us the size of bees and encouraged us to be nice to the earth. So imaginative, these children, Grandma Rose says. Looks like Auntie Amina really inspired you. Now let's go home and clean so we can go visit friends. The end. Holly, you're still muted.
Okay, so that brings us to our presentation by the wonderful Katrina Daly Thompson, who is professor and chair in the Department of African Cultural Studies at UW-Madison, where she conducts linguistic anthropological research and teaches on language, gender, and sexuality in African and Muslim communities. And the title of her presentation is Lessons in Inclusivity, What Progressive You Use or What You Use Can Learn from Progressive Muslims.
Thank you. I'm just trying to get my other PowerPoint open. I don't know if it's sharing the screen. I guess not. All right. Good morning, everyone. My name is Katrina Daly Thompson, and my pronouns are she or they. I've been a member of Prairie for about 2 years. Currently, I manage Prairie's Facebook page, and I'm also a member of the search committee for our new minister. I'm excited to share some of my current research project with you today. Although most of my research over the last 20 years or so has focused on language use in East and Southern Africa, my current project examines the language use of progressive Muslims in a network of North American groups and an overlapping global network of online groups. My talk today is titled Lessons in Inclusivity. This talk examines language socialization in these networks with a focus on congregants in a progressive LGBTQ majority mosque in Canada. Examining how group members take up different discursive roles during Friday prayers to enact authority, I will demonstrate that they influence one another's language use through socialization into inclusivity of not only queer, but also other marginalized Muslims. In doing so, they transform one another's language use as they move toward their collective goal of intersectional inclusivity. Finally, I will ask, what can you use, learn from the radically inclusive practices of progressive Muslims? Oops, my advancing slides here is not working properly. Okay, that's my subtitle, What You Use Can Learn from Progressive Muslims. This project emerged from my personal experience as a progressive Muslim. I started learning about Islam through my research among and personal relationships with Swahili-speaking Muslims in Zanzibar, and I converted to Islam in 2009 while I was living in Los Angeles. As I sought a Muslim community where I could be fully welcomed as a queer, bisexual woman and a feminist, I was lucky to find a group called Muslims for Progressive Values, or MPV for short. Although I remained very involved in the Unitarian Universalist Community Church of Santa Monica, I also developed a new community of progressive Muslims with whom I gathered regularly for Friday prayers, Quran discussion groups, Sufi chanting, Ramadan dinners, and Eid celebrations. Through MPV, as well as online groups for progressive Muslims, I got to know others throughout the U.S. and beyond. When I moved to Madison in 2013, I could not find any other progressive Muslims who were interested in creating the kind of community I'd experienced in Los Angeles, so I became more involved in the online groups and continued to grow this network. Because of these connections, when I began conducting research on progressive Muslims in 2016, I was able to visit a number of different groups, not just as a participant observer, but also as a partial member, since I share the identity of progressive Muslim with those whose language I'm studying. So I want to turn now to the research itself. The larger project has a number of different aspects, but the one I want to focus on today is language socialization. Language socialization refers to both how we learn to use language in ways that are appropriate for the particular social groups we belong to, and how we learn through language to act in ways appropriate for those groups. The instruction that leads to this learning can either be explicit, as when we tell children to say please or thank you, or implicit, as when children pick up the language they hear us using, even when we don't want them to. I won't give any examples to keep this family friendly, but I think you can all think of some from your own families. We usually think of language socialization as something that takes place during childhood, but it also continues during adulthood each time we join a new social group. So my interest here is in how participants in progressive Muslim groups learn to use language in ways considered appropriate to those groups, ways that contribute to the formation of the community itself. Language socialization research typically focuses on how people learn to conform to norms, which all too often are exclusionary. I argue that by looking at how people who are queer or anti-normative in various ways also engage in learning can show us new possibilities for ways of engaging with one another and for building more inclusive worlds. And later I'll come back to how UU communities like Prairie as another example of how we can learn to use language in more inclusive ways. What does it mean to be a progressive Muslim? In short, we can understand the term to refer to Muslims who are non-conformist in various ways: marginalized in relation to mainstream Islam, feminist, LGBT inclusive, and broadly focused on social justice. As you can see, UUs have a great deal in common with progressive Muslims. If you're interested in learning more about progressive Muslim ideas, the book by Omid Safi that you can see here is a source I would recommend, though it focuses on scholars and activists rather than the ordinary Muslims that I'm researching. In the larger project that I'm working on, I visited progressive Muslim groups and mosques in 7 cities in the US and Canada, with focal groups in Atlanta and Toronto, and I've conducted participant observation in 3 online groups as well. The group that I'm focusing on today in Toronto refers to itself as Tawhidic, a reference to the Arabic Islamic concept Tawhid. Tawhid literally means God's unity and incomparability, or monotheism, but it is used by many in the groups I studied to also refer to the unity among people and a demand for treating all human beings with respect. For example, Kelly explained, Tawhid is the one thing that connects us all and makes us aware of something higher than ourselves. Whether that is God or another concept, it's intricately tied to progressive values for me, because it's the innate desire to acknowledge that connectiveness and the want to do what it takes to make sure every part of that is acknowledged and affirmed for who they are. I think you can see, again, that despite the emphasis on belief in God, which might not be relevant to many UUs, the concept of Tawhid, at least as understood by progressives, is quite similar to the UU principle of the inherent worth and dignity of every human being. The data that I present here are a small subset of many hours of recordings I made at various progressive Muslim events, from Friday prayers at an LGBTQ majority mosque in Toronto that was one of my focal sites. The mosque is loosely affiliated with a number of other organizations. Although the majority of congregants were raised Sunni, the mosque itself is not affiliated with any sect. Mosque etiquette, read aloud each week before the prayer service begins, reminds congregants, our community is not monolithic. We have people from diverse sects and tariqas or Sufi orders, diverse relationships with Islam, with diverse understandings of Islam. The reference to diverse relationships with Islam also reflects the inclusion of converts and non-Muslims, including both regular attendees as well as occasional visitors, such as local interfaith leaders, college students, and friends or romantic partners of congregants. On a typical Friday, 20 to 40 people attend, making it the largest of the groups I researched. The majority of them are in their 20s and 30s, many of them college and graduate students. A handful are over 40, and occasionally there are some families with young children. The majority of younger congregants are the children of immigrants, while the older congregants are more likely to be immigrants themselves or converts. There are usually also a handful of recently arrived LGBTQ African refugees who attend as volunteers to set up the space, but who may not be Muslim themselves. So I'm going to get now into the nitty-gritty of the data, and I've tried to kind of narrativize this a little bit more than I usually do in presentations, but I do have a few transcripts to show that hopefully won't be too detailed for you. The conversation that I'll focus on here took place during Friday prayers at the end of June 2019. As we'll see, congregants socialize one another not only into performing mixed gender prayer with a non-male imam, but also into Shia inclusivity and evolving understandings of their prayer format using non-gendered language. There were about 30 people present on this particular Friday, but there are just 4 people whom I'll mention here by name. On this particular day, I gave the first call to prayer. David, an intersex and queer Jew of Tunisian ancestry, gave the khutbah or sermon. The coordinating imam, an African-born gay man of Indian ancestry named Elijah, assigned Selma, an American-born Shia congregant of Pakistani ancestry, to lead the prayer. Elijah then jokingly warned other congregants that Selma would lead prayer Shia style. Sunnis, he said, don't freak out, just breathe, he said, laughing. Even though woman-led prayer of a mixed-gender group is condemned by majoritarian Muslims, Here it is the taken for granted norm, and thus goes unremarked, while it is Sama leading Shia style that is marked as somehow different from this community's norm. After Salma led prayer in Arabic, with mixed gender rows beside and behind her, we returned to a circle. We again entered a socialization frame when Elijah observed that Salma did different stuff than he was used to and made specific contrast to previous Shia-led prayers. Elijah may have been positioning himself as a learner, simply wanting to understand variations in Shia style. Or he might have been taking up a position of ritual enforcer, implying that Salma had made a mistake and subtly offering a correction. Taking up a teacher position, Salma rejected this implication, explaining that this is actually the proper way of doing Friday prayers in the Shia style, and that on previous occasions they had prayed in a Shia style used for other prayers, but not proper for Fridays. Salma's performance of the proper form of Friday prayers and explicit articulation of the value of leading prayer properly also served as a form of peer socialization, conveying to others how to be a good imam or prayer leader. Salma concluded, "I realize that if I'm going to be like the Shia imam here, I should do it correctly." This self-reference alluded to the fact that Elijah often assigned Salma the role of imam. As the usual coordinating imam, Elijah tries to rotate all the leadership roles among congregants, seeking a mixture of people of various genders, nationalities, skin colors, sects, and so on in various roles. Because Shia congregants are in the minority, when they are present, Elijah often tries to include them in some way, which is why he responded, "Well, for now, you are it." The smile emoji that you see here and the at symbol indicate that they're both kind of smiling and laughing throughout this. The at symbol is the represents a pulse of laughter. After a brief side conversation with some other congregants, Elijah concluded, "Usually we have women lead the salat or prayer, right?" With this, he implied that the reason Salma has become the Shia imam is that she is the only Shia woman who regularly attends. But Elijah's statement rests on the mistaken premise that Salma is a woman. Thus, Salma interrupted to correct him, saying, "I'm not a woman." In this excerpt, we see Elijah's surprise. "Huh?" Salma says, "I'm not a woman." Elijah, "Those who pray, so okay then, help me figure that one out then." Everyone else starts laughing throughout this. And Elijah says, "So okay, maybe I just move you out to the side and we have to find another?" Elijah's question, false start, hesitation, and explicit request for help clearly indicate that he is flummoxed by Salma's revelation. On previous occasions, Salma had identified as a woman. It's possible that this interaction was the first time Elijah had heard Salma refer to themselves as not a woman. Moreover, even after coming out as non-binary, Salma continued to wear stereotypically feminine clothing, including sometimes hijab. Salma told me later that it had only been about 6 months since they had realized they were non-binary. However, I do not read Elijah's confusion as only or even primarily about how to categorize Salma's gender, since there are many gender non-conforming and non-binary congregants, and there is a community norm of learning and correctly using one another's pronouns. Rather, Elijah's request for help and half-hearted suggestion that he no longer ask Salma to lead prayer reflect his grappling with this mosque's typical practice of woman-led prayer, and whether continuing to use this label will mean excluding people like Salma from leadership. In other words, there seems to be a contradiction between the mosque's two stated goals, one of being gender equal and the other of being LGBTQ affirming. Salma went on to allay Elijah's concerns. "Gender nonconforming," she says, "so it's actually, you know, it's not a gendered salat then." Salma, Sheen, and David take up positions as teachers and Elijah as learner. Salma proposes a new understanding of this mosque's Friday prayer, not as woman-led, as Elijah had suggested earlier, but rather as not a gendered Salat. Selma's reformulation also suggests that the group's implicit critique of more traditional Friday prayers is not necessarily that they are led by men, but that men are allowed to lead by virtue of their gender. Rather than seeing Selma's self-identification as gender nonconforming, as contradicting the practice of woman-led prayer, Sheen suggests that they reframe their practice as one where imams are people who aren't men. Selma, Elijah, and David all took positive stances toward this suggestion. David bolstered Sheen's suggestion by arguing that this shift in wording would also allow other non-binary and intersex congregants to serve as imams, not just Selma. Even though these four, and presumably others, agreed that people who aren't men works well as a descriptor of those allowed to be imam, and Elijah offered thank you as a kind of conclusion to the discussion, he seemed to take David's remarks as an indication that they were still searching for a term. Thus, Elijah proposed non-male persons, and both David and Sheen agreed. Their conversation thus served as a kind of mutual socialization process through which they taught one another new terms, negotiated their use, and finally agreed on a term that they will use in the future. Socialization into queer language use, here exemplified by the language of non-binary gender, is not only about gender and sexuality, but also has implications for other aspects of the community's inclusivity, particularly the breaking down of sectarian binaries. By bringing humor into Friday prayers, airing potential sources of discomfort around sectarian and other biases that might cause some to freak out, and making space for open discussion and learning of non-gendered language, the community collectively socializes one another into new forms of inclusivity. Finally, I want to turn to what we can learn from all of this as UUs. In the communities I study, we can see that acquiring queer cultural and discursive competency is necessary for all members of the community, regardless of their own gender and sexual identity, and they are constantly socializing each other toward it. As UUs and as part of Prairie, I suggest we need to do the same. We have already made some progress toward inclusivity of people of all genders by asking speakers to share their pronouns when we introduce ourselves. Each time we do so, we are not only letting one another know how we want to be referred to, but we are also indicating that referring to people the way they want to be referred to is important to our community. We are creating a space where everyone can feel comfortable sharing who they are without putting the burden only on those who are supposedly different. As a community still learning to be in community with one another, each time we do so, we are also engaging in language socialization of one another, implicitly teaching each other to use language in ways that reflect our UU principles. We can also learn from the progressive Muslims we met today that despite our best intentions, we will make mistakes. We should not be afraid to sometimes socialize one another more explicitly to correct one another's mistakes, but this can be done with grace and humor. Thank you for listening. And happy Ramadan. Answer any questions that you might have.
If people want to talk, if you can raise your hand or raise your hand in the participant list, you can unmute. Looks like
Holly. Oh, hi. Thanks, Katrina. I wrote down a few things that I thought were really interesting. It was interesting to hear your observations of the way that ways that people were socializing each other. And I realized that as a teacher, I've thought that way a lot, right? Noticing when kids are involving themselves in explicit teaching of each other and implicit teaching of each other. So that was just an interesting correlation to make. And I recognize that I did not say my pronouns when I was, introducing myself as the presider, which are she, her, hers.
Mm-hmm. Karen, was that a hand? No.
Go ahead. So I've been thinking a lot about the contrast or the difficult balance between wanting to be relaxed and not have to think too hard with my community, because this is where I let my hair down and just be who I am, with working really hard to be better and a better community member and to help my community and to help other people in the community. And for me, this is a really difficult balance. I feel like I'm thinking so hard about my language and my interactions with people all week at work, and I don't want to have to think on the weekend. And it actually reminds me too of how me and many people I know tend to mistreat their partner because, hey, I shouldn't have to work this hard. This is my partner. This person loves me. Why should I have to work this hard? And yet, on the other hand, this is the person you want to work the hardest with. Just this balance. I just wanted to bring that issue up.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, this doesn't apply to the parallel with one's partner, but I think in terms of other communities that we belong to, one way of approaching this is to kind of practice in other times, like the fact, like making it part of the ritual. So the fact that we now have a ritual where we introduce our pronouns when we're speaking, and, you know, it's written down in our notes about what we're going to say so we don't forget to do it. Like over time, that just helps it become more normal, and then you don't have to feel like you're trying so hard in the future. Penny.
Yeah, I have a question. With your progressive communities you study, do they use inclusive God language?
Yeah, it varies quite a bit because a lot of them are children of immigrants or immigrants themselves. So if they grew up in kind of more traditional communities, often they will still refer to God as he. I mean, most translations of the Quran do that. And so people have kind of been socialized into that. But there is a movement to move away from that. So there's often a lot of discussion about using she or it, or kind of alternating between different pronouns when talking about God. And at this particular mosque that I talked about today, they have this actually pretty long etiquette guidelines that they read aloud at the start of every service. And there they explicitly say, you know, that we will refer to God using a variety of pronouns because they want to kind of warn newcomers who might not be used to that so they don't get shocked. But yeah, that's something that I'm interested in writing about in this larger project, particularly in the online groups. I've seen some really interesting discussions where more conservative people will join the online groups. Usually temporarily, they end up either leaving or getting kicked out. But while they're there, they have interesting debates about whether it's okay to refer to God using she and things like that. I think I saw Holly's hand up again too.
So I'm going back to the education piece again, because that's sort of my wheelhouse. But it was interesting. I'm reflecting further on this idea that it's okay to explicitly teach each other more. And one of the things I keep, I guess one of the things that I try really hard to further in my work with kids and parents is this idea that everybody's a learner. Right. And that there's not like an age cutoff where now you know everything, and so you've turned into a teacher, and that you embody both roles throughout your lifetime. And I think it's just, I guess I'm just reflecting on how that can be uncomfortable for people, right? To be taught something, and maybe even to be taught by somebody who's younger or I don't know, who's different. It would be just a different age group. And I just think there's a lot of really positive implications for all of us to maybe embody this, this willingness to step into the discomfort of being unsure about something.
Thanks. That's actually, that helped. I'm working on a academic version of this right now that like it's already under revise and resubmit for a journal. But what you just said helps me think of something that I should add to that, because I think Elijah here, I mean, he's the leader, he's one of the elders in the community, he's the founder, like he could take this position that he has nothing left to learn, but he actually really does model learning and allowing people to critique him and so on. And I think that's also showing others that it's okay to do that.
Right. And from a trauma-informed lens, it's really important for a person who's in a leadership position to be able to model the role of learner. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, once we got all this crazy stuff going on with education these days, right? But and teachers are suddenly being thrust into this role of learner all of a sudden. How do I do online learning? How do I connect with my students from a virtual standpoint? How do I create community when we can't be in person? And I, for one, think it's really amazing.
Thanks for that. I think Mary and
Patty have that. I had a question about the maps that you showed of, were those all places that you had done your research, or I wasn't quite sure.
Oh, yeah. The ones in the U.S. and Canada were all places that I have visited for this project, and the ones that were outside of North America are folks that I have interviewed using Skype and things like that.
So are they all non-traditional in a way? Or
they're all people who are affiliated in some way with groups that call themselves progressive, either online or in person. Some of them don't have access to in-person groups, but are very active in the online groups.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. And yeah, I kind of ran out of time to get into that, but mostly I wanted folks to see sort of the diversity of these communities that I think without seeing photos of people or hearing their voices, people that I've spoken to about this project tend to have like an image of what a Muslim looks like, and they will either assume that these people are from a certain place or that they're converts or, you know, whatever fits their their imagining, but it's actually a very diverse community in terms of where people are from and their backgrounds and so on. I see Karen's hand up.
So I wanted to say something related to what Rachel was talking about our level of comfort at Prairie and in our workplaces and other areas. And to me, it's very, I feel like I can relax more at Prairie because it's kind of expected that we'll have discussions about pronouns and gender, you know, and inclusivity. Because, you know, having a non-binary kid, when I'm at work and I talk to a lot of different people, and it very often people will say, well, how is your child doing using gendered language? And so then I have to get into a discussion about the concept of being non-binary and the use of they, them pronouns to refer to individuals. And, you know, so that gets to be cumbersome to be in that role of educator during an interchange that's just, you know, usually it's just kind of like, hi, how are you? How's the family? You know, and at Prairie, we can have discussions like that without, you know, it's more comfortable. So it's another way of feeling the difference between work life and Prairie life.
Thank you. I see Anne Pryor has her hand up. I'm trying to unmute you, Anne, just a second. There we go. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes. Is it good?
Yes.
All right. And I want to go back to one of the things that you said when you first came to Madison and tried to find a progressive Muslim community here and were unable to. I assume that is still the case. I'm wondering, what is it about Madison, or what is it about the Muslims in Madison that prevented you or that has not allowed that to happen?
Yeah, it's not entirely still the case. Just in the last 6 months or so, I finally started to meet other people, and we have started a small group in Madison. For a while we were actually meeting at the Prairie Annex, but then the location wasn't good for folk, like younger people who lived downtown and didn't have good transportation. Mm-hmm. So we're meeting when it's not quarantine at Festival Foods. They have a community room that they let nonprofits use. And now we're meeting on Zoom. But when I first moved here, I don't know exactly what it was. I met a few people who sort of affiliated with the label progressive, but they were not as progressive as I wanted them to be or as I was used to from the community I had been involved in Los Angeles. And so it just kind of petered out. And then I met another academic at the university who teaches Islamic law. And, you know, I was introduced to her as, you know, here's another Muslim feminist. Oh, and actually when I first came, I tried to start a group that was called Muslim Feminists of Madison. And when I met this woman at the university, she told me, oh, it's because you're using the word feminist. That's why no one is joining your group. like that's scaring people away. And so I said, well, what do you think would be a better name? And she said, how about Unmasked Muslims of Madison? I don't know if your folks know there was a documentary a few years ago called Unmasked Muslims. And some research has also shown that the majority of Muslims in the United States are unmasked and that they're not affiliated with any mosque. And so possibly that means they're more progressive than most mosques allow. And so we changed our name to that, and it did take off. It started gaining a lot of people, but again, they were not progressive in the way that I wanted them to be. They didn't seem to care about LGBTQ issues very much, and weren't comfortable with woman-led prayer, mixed-gender prayer, things like that. Not necessarily opposed to it, but just not something that they were comfortable with or used to. And it seemed more like it was Muslims who just wanted a chance to socialize, like outside of a religious community, where I was looking for a community that could be both spiritual and progressive. and so I kind of abandoned them. That group still exists. They changed their name now, but this new group, we're actually using the name, like we're sort of a chapter of this mosque in Toronto that I mentioned. And so we use their name, and I think that has given us a little bit of visibility, that people are finding us. And now that we're on Zoom, we're actually having people participate from other places in the country where they might not have face-to-face groups. So it's finally have my UU community and my Muslim community again. Yeah. Karen has another question.
I was wondering, what are there specific things that you would like to see Prairie doing in order to be more effectively promote inclusivity?
Well, I think I posted in Prairie Views a while ago, but a group of us have started up an Interweave chapter or LGBTQ group. We only had one meeting before the quarantine happened, so it'll be slow to take off. But one of the things that we talked about was revisiting the welcoming congregation. There's like a series of steps that the congregation is meant to go through periodically, and it's been quite a long time since that happened. And I think theoretically we're even meant to do it every year, which may not be realistic, but we could at least redo it.
I think it happened before I came to Prairie, so it's been a little while.
Yeah. So we plan to work on that. And I would like to see us get more involved in Pride, whether that's marching in a Pride parade or actually, again, before the quarantine happened, I had been intending to talk to Holly about having like a family-focused booth at Pride. We went last year, and there were a lot of other churches that were hosting like little activities or games so that people would stop and talk, and then, like, you know, maybe they get a little free thing that has the name of the church on it. So I think it would be a way of kind of advertising Prairie to the LGBT community of Madison, or allies as well.
I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
I think we have to wrap it up, but we can have more discussion during the coffee hour. Sorry, Patty. Because we're almost at 11 o'clock and we still have a couple things.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Katrina. I did want to dovetail because you mentioned about the welcoming congregation renewal. So everyone, today's service actually meets one of those, or is working towards one of those requirements, which is you need to have at least 6 services where you recognize one of the days of recognition with LGBTQ. So today is the day of silence recognition, and we have the story for all ages that tied into that, and one of the I think the closing words that tied into that, or the chalice lighting. So today actually is one of, we're like working towards that, our service here today. So thank you so much, Katrina, and I'll hand it back to Holly.
How was the service?
Yeah. Okay. So now we are to the offering portion of our offertory, and the link is in the order of service. I believe that you just use that link to make your offering if you choose. And I'm going to play the offertory, which is Valse Sentimentale by Franz Schubert, performed by Amber. And it's coming up. Oops, I'm sorry. There we go. Wanted to mention that I can't see the chat right now, but the link is available in the order of service if you didn't get a chance to do that just now, and I believe also on the website. And so now we have the closing words, Wholeness by Sharon Wiley, read by Catherine or Kate. So I can unmute you.
You're unmuted already.
Okay. We speak so often of brokenness in religious life. Let us speak today of wholeness. You are welcome here, all of you, every part of you beautiful just the way you are. Here you do not need to be something more or something less. No holding back, no hiding, no exerting yourself, no trying to do more or be more. You have inherent worth and dignity. Nothing to prove here. Nothing to prove to me or the person sitting next to you or to the children or to anyone. You don't have to try and be witty or more quiet or more outgoing. You are beautiful. Every part of you beautiful just the way you are. You do not need to change anything about yourself to be welcome here. Your skin, your hair, your belly, your limbs, your face, all beautiful just the way they are. You are extraordinary, each and every one of you different from each and beautiful in your own beautiful way, breathtaking. Let us worship together.